Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. It was bound to happen sooner or later. Gold prices slumped in Western Europe today after reaching record highs earlier in the week. The price dropped $13 in London from yesterday's close. It's now trading at $373 an ounce. And it's somewhat above that in Zurich, where it fell $7 from yesterday's close. One Zurich dealer says gold is behaving like a yo-yo. The dollar, by no means a yo-yo, declined again in Tokyo and has reached its lowest levels of the year on the European exchanges. Here in New York, it could be another big day in Wall Street, and we'll hear about that from Ray Brady.
Wall Streeters are hoping that the big rally in the stock market, which started near the close yesterday, will carry through when trading starts a short time from now. In that very last hour of trading yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average went from a gain of about 5 points to close more than 17 points ahead. And the volume of trading on the New York Stock Exchange boiled upward to more than 45 million shares, a figure that is normally regarded as a sign of broad buying support in the market. It was the oils which set off the buying, sparked by rumors of new oil finds off Newfoundland. So among the oil stocks, Gulf, which has an interest in those East Canadian wells, rose more than 2 points, and Mobil Corporation shot up more than 4 points. That brought the price of Mobil stock to the highest level in its history, and it meant investors yesterday added nearly $1 billion to the stock's total market value. Ray Brady, CBS News, New York.
The New York Stock Exchange Index of more than 1,500 listed common stocks now stands at 62.85, its highest level since February 1973. Leaders of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference have been meeting in Beirut with officials of the Palestine Liberation Organization. And Randy Daniels reports that the SCLC president, the Reverend Joseph Lowry, summed up the high points this morning.
At a news conference, Reverend Lowry said he proposed a moratorium on violence in the Middle East to allow the peace process to go forward. He said PLO Chairman Yasser Arafat agreed to consider the proposal and would present the idea to the executive committee of the guerrilla organization and respond within a week. Lowry, a disciple of Martin Luther King and a proponent of nonviolence, did not completely rule out the right of the Palestinians to defend themselves.
During the moratorium, when there is no bombing, no killing, if there are no aggression, there will be no need for defense. And that while that moratorium exists, that the Palestinians be brought to the peace table and the peace process will continue in that atmosphere of nonviolence, and it will give great relief to the suffering that we witness here in the Middle East.
The SCLC delegation has canceled its planned stop in Israel after the government of Prime Minister Menachem Begin made it clear that it would not receive the group. Lowry added that if Israel is not interested in a moratorium on violence, that it must bear the responsibility for continued hostilities. Randy Daniels, CBS News, Beirut.
If the White House had had its way, a compromise bill implementing the Panama Canal treaties would have been on President Carter's desk this morning. The Senate passed the legislation yesterday, 62-35, but later on, the House rejected it on a vote of 203-192. Neil Strauser reports what happened then.
The first reaction of the White House after the House vote was to call Panama to urge coolness, avoidance of any violence that might disrupt any new attempt in House-Senate conference to agree on implementing legislation that will satisfy the apparent House wish for greater control over the canal transfer process. One White House official said, if there is a crisis in the Western Hemisphere right now, it is not the Soviet troops in Cuba, it is getting the Panama legislation through. But the official also admitted that the troop issue hurt and noted that some 26 former supporters of the legislation took a walk this time and failed to vote at all. The floor manager in the House, John Murphy, called the vote an expression of House frustration with administration policy in the Caribbean. Winning House approval of a new compromise is still chancy and time is short. The treaty goes into effect October 1st. And Murphy warns if the U.S. isn't prepared to implement its terms, the Panamanians might feel justified in claiming a treaty violation and immediately trying to take over the canal. Neil Strauser, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The White House is still denying reports that Hamilton Jerdan, President Carter's chief of staff, had used cocaine at parties, and News Secretary Jody Powell describes as not accurate a description by Leo Weiler, a former Carter fundraiser, of a party at his Los Angeles home in 1977. Weiler told CBS News yesterday that the party was, in his word, licentious, that Jerdan and two other White House staff aides attended, and that he, Weiler, felt, quote, that their approach to this relaxation was one of drugs and girls. Government officials today are still worrying about the disappearance of a quantity of uranium from the Nuclear Fuel Services plant in Irwin, Tennessee. Sam Ford reports from Atlanta what's being done about it.
The NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, will begin flights today around the plant site with a helicopter equipped with radiation detection devices. This will determine whether the more than 20 pounds of bomb-grade uranium escaped into the atmosphere and fell nearby. Authorities say the missing uranium could, in fact, be a mere error in bookkeeping, or at least they hope that's what it is. And, reluctantly, Robert Burnett, director of the NRC's investigating team, admits the uranium could have been stolen.
I'm not sure that we will ever completely resolve this inventory difference, as we have not been able to others in the past. That does not say for sure that it left under unauthorized means. It still could be that we just are not, we do not have the ability to tell you where it did go.
The plant, which processes fuel for Navy nuclear submarines, will be closed for at least a month and probably longer while the NRC conducts a re-inventory of the facility in search of that uranium. Sam Ford, CBS News, Atlanta.
China and the Soviet Union face each other in the UN General Assembly this morning for a showdown in Cambodia. Richard C. Hartland reports that they have marshaled their forces and they're expected to use every punch possible in a parliamentary free-for-all.
The full assembly will vote on its credentials committee's recommendations to let Pol Pot's Democratic Kampuchea represent Cambodia at this year's session. The Soviet Union is bitterly against doing so, arguing that Pol Pot has no popular backing and controls no territory in Cambodia. Moscow would like to see the Heng Samrin regime take Cambodia's seat. China argues that whatever Pol Pot may be, he has been pushed out of Phnom Penh by a Vietnamese army in a Soviet power play, and that the UN cannot sanctify the fruit of aggression. The Southeast Asian countries and others agree with China, but the Soviet Union has a fallback position. The summit conference of the Non-Aligned in Havana earlier this month decided that neither Pol Pot nor Heng Samrin should represent Cambodia, that the chair should remain empty for the time being. This strategy of the empty chair strikes many countries here as a reasonable way out of an unpleasant controversy. If it succeeds, Moscow will have won. If not, China will have scored a point in their struggle for influence in Southeast Asia. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
A call to prayer seems harmless enough in itself, but an amplified call to prayer, well, that's something else again, as we hear from Robert Jordan in Dearborn, Michigan.
Members of the Arab Mosque in Dearborn say they must start each prayer five times a day with the azum, or call for prayer. The call is amplified through speakers atop the mosque and can be heard for more than 10 blocks around. Dearborn police have received more than 50 calls from sleepless residents complaining about the first chant heard today at 5:47 a.m. Ruth Drum is a complainant who lives nearby.
When it wakes you up out of your sleep, if you have to get up early in the morning to go to work, it's terrific. It sounds worse than a foghorn.
So city official Roy Scroy says he will enforce the ordinance, which prohibits loudspeakers between midnight and 7 a.m.
We enact the laws, and we have to enforce them. And if that means appealing to whatever court is necessary to uphold the rule of law, then we would do so.
But mosque official Musa Jabril said they too were prepared to fight it out in court.
We are not going to surrender. We've got to fight it, even if we have to go to the upper court, like the United States Supreme Court. We're not going to surrender that.
So the call for prayer and the call for sleep will ultimately be heard by the courts. Robert Jordan, CBS News, Dearborn, Michigan.
Striking employees of the Rock Island Railroad are still off the job today in defiance of President Carter's back-to-work order. Picket lines are still up outside company headquarters. Reports from the Central African Empire say that Jean Bedel Bokassa, self-styled emperor for life, was overthrown today in a bloodless coup and may have fled to Libya. He was deposed by his nephew, David Dacko.